I lean my back against you, thinking you were an oak. I knew the wind could bend you, but I can't believe you broke.
Now the wind could never break me, only your false love.
Honey, I've been through, I swear by God above.
I thought you were a willow, but you never wept for me. You went roaming in the wildwood like a ship that roams the sea.
The willow tree is fickle and it weeps in the morning dew. My love is a pine tree, and that's the only tree that's true.
Pine Tree. That's our intro for our special guest today. We have Adam Burke. He's the founder of the Treehouse Institute. A little June and Johnny Cash. What do you think about that as a new theme song for yourself?
I enjoyed it very much. Thanks for selecting it.
Well, it all goes to Emily. She does extensive research, like days at a time. She'll be in her office, just headset on, focusing on the perfect music. So I'm glad we hit it out of the park. Haven't seen you for about 3 years, Adam Burke. You've been doing a lot of things.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Principal of Adam Burke & Company, CEO, founder of Treehouse Institute that we want to talk about. Also a longtime producer of the TEDx Dirigo event, which is coming up next month here in Southern Maine.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to get to all of that. Where should we start? I mean, we have 21 minutes. Boy, how about we talk about TEDx? Because, you know what? Let's talk about education. For a while, you were involved as chief operating officer of Baxter Academy for Science and one of the first of three charter schools to launch here in Maine. Is that right? Was it the third or fourth?
Yeah, I was one of the first 10.
One of the first group.
That was going to be allowed under the legislation.
Are you still involved in education per se? I know you're no longer with Baxter Academy, but was that something that you worked to launch that and you moved on to other things? Or are you still involved with education?
Yeah, still involved as an ally on the edge of the system, I would say. So, for example, with the Portland Global Shapers, which is one of the initiatives of the Treehouse Institute, we are working on a program called Maine Girls Innovate, which is working with middle school girls. One, to empower them. The research shows that middle school is a moment when girls start hearing a different narrative. Instead of you can be anything you want, it's no, girls don't do that, that sort of thing. So this program is seeded with a workshop developed by some Stanford University students called Girls Driving for a Difference. And then it scaffolds from them building a mission statement for themselves to help them create action based on that mission statement. And we do that in partnership with the schools.
And where will that actually kind of connect here in Maine? Different school systems you've talked to, or, you know, what does that look like the first launch?
Yeah, we've been talking with King Middle School and Portland Public Library. And so there's a couple, and Hardy Girls Healthy Women. So a couple different partnerships to be brought together to pull that off.
Fantastic. What do you think about question two, the upcoming referendum? Are you up to speed on that?
I am not.
Emily, what do you think of it?
I think it's not very clear as to what it affects or who it affects, who benefits.
Yeah, it feels a little bizarre. And I'm paraphrasing because every referendum is very technical in kind of the wording and the scope. But in general, it's positioned as an education teacher referendum. That's kind of the headline that voters will see when they go to vote in a few weeks. But within it, it says that it's a referendum to create a new tax, 3% tax, on anyone and everyone in Maine earning more than $200,000 a year. And the idea is for that money to go specifically to hiring of teachers across the state and kind of fit into the educational format. The problem with it, and I'm still researching it because it feels a little bizarre, is it wasn't created through the state legislature. It was a referendum by the teachers' union specifically to hire more teachers, which I understand their perspective. And who doesn't want more teachers? Education, I think, is critical here in Maine and all over. But it's a little bit bizarre when one group or one special group produces a referendum specific to their interest. And if 97 or 98% of the people in Maine don't fall into that threshold of over $200,000, you can imagine anyone going into a voting booth going, yeah, it doesn't affect me. Why wouldn't I want to just raise the tax?
Sure.
So I think that'll be, I don't know. And the other thing is, up until last month, the group that was yes for question two, which was the teachers union, I think they spent $300,000 or $400,000 promoting it. There is no for question two group. Nobody organized. The people who make over $200,000 a year never get together and said, hey, you see this thing over here? But it would be like, you know, me next year or 2 years from now going, hey, I'm going to do a referendum. I think it'd be great to raise, you know, we have so many needs here, Maine, but, you know, I want to raise money to help with senior elderly health care. And for anyone who makes over $300,000 a year, we'll do a 5% state tax on them. Who's for senior health care?
Right.
And everyone would just go, yeah, of course I am. It doesn't, I'm not paying for it. So
yeah, lots to learn there. So as part of the need that they've identified, is that because budgets keep shrinking, so the ratio between teachers and students gets higher, so they want to reduce that, or do they have gaps?
It's gaps because of the state funding formula for 55% of state funds supposedly going back to different school systems, and it's a flawed system. Mm-hmm. And whenever you have a flawed system in general and you try to address one element, which in this case they're just trying to bring in, I think it's $150 million in new revenue. But it's selecting one group. And I think tax reform is the issue. I think we need to have better focus on tax reform. And I think we need to invest more in education. I just think it's kind of a clumsy referendum when it identifies one group and says basically it's an education referendum when really it's a new tax referendum, which, you know,
right. People
will debate that hurts in other ways.
Yes.
Talk about the upcoming TEDx Dirigo. I've been looking at it online. It looks like you have a lot of interesting speakers. And when we talked last time, a couple of years ago when you were here, I'm a big fan of TED, and which is the global kind of platform where everyone's familiar with the TED speeches. But for people that may not be familiar for the main version, talk a little bit about how long it's been running, what's the format of the program, are tickets available, and who is speaking this year, who are the headliners, and we'll talk about TEDx Dirigo a little bit.
Great. TEDx Dirigo started in 2010, just after TED created the TEDx program, which was just an experiment for them because people said they wanted to bring the energy of the TED conference back to their home communities. And they didn't really think much was going to happen with it. And there was this huge explosion of local community organizers bringing it home. So Dean Merrill got the first license back in 2010. We hosted a 100-person event up at Frontier in Brunswick. It sold out. People loved it. We heard right away that people thought it was important and more of it was needed in Maine. So we kept it going. It's all volunteer produced. We grew to a 300-person event, and this will be our 9th TEDx Dirigo event, our 7th fall event, coming up on November 5th at the State Theater. Tickets are available at TEDxDirigo.com. I'll put out a special code, STEVO, with a capital S, so your listeners can get a 10% off registration.
I may be on that. By the way, it's STEVO, STEVOE. And so anyone listening that's interested, boy, this is late-breaking news there, Sully. We need to get this.
I know. I'm pretty excited about this, I have to say.
We need to get the social media machine on this.
Sure will.
So Steve-O listeners get 10% off if they go to the website and then in the promo code type in Steve-O.
That's right.
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
So is it a one-day event? And talk about who some of the speakers are and some of the subjects. Underlying, for people that may not be familiar with the TED Talks, what is the objective? And is it specific to Maine? Are the speakers focusing on Maine areas that kind of fall under the TED kind of umbrella? And what's the objective for people either attending or for TEDx Dirigo in terms of the mission?
Yeah, so it's leveraging the TED Talk format. So all these are 18 minutes or less, no notes, no podium. People are on the stage sharing their stories.
Is it 18 minutes?
18 minutes or less. Most of the talks that we run are 6 minutes to 15 minutes. And it's all one stage. Doors are at noon. Show starts at 1 at the State Theater. and there's 15 speakers that will run over two sessions. And, you know, you asked about headliners, and one of the things I think that's important about TED and TEDx Dirigo is we don't focus on headliners. We focus on the ideas we're spreading. Mm-hmm. And so whether that's somebody you might already know or somebody you've never heard about, it's about the idea. And we've been using that to celebrate main ideas we're spreading, the innovation and creativity that's been happening in the state since we got started. And we also use it as a way to introduce new ideas into the state. So we're just not a provincial event, reinforcing our own echo chamber.
Okay.
So at this coming event, we have Emmy Qualley and Amy Lazaris coming in from out of town. They created something called Design for Worldview, where they use design thinking to dig into unconscious bias, which is something we all have. And they developed this program while Emmy was a senior designer at the Stanford D School. And Emmy runs an organization called Inclusion Ventures. We'll have Dana Fidel, who's a sex education teacher. And on the coin side of that, we'll have Alexandra Lawrence, who's a documentary filmmaker, who is an art historian by training, and has seen the dark side of the world, which is sex trafficking. So one of the taboos in this world, one of the things we don't know how to enter into often is sex, right? Something we have dissonance about. So we're going to venture into that in two different ways during the day, one with Alex's perspective and experience. And
did Dana's. You say we don't? I want to get it clear because some of our listeners may be challenging that because we have a very active listener base. The thing we don't understand, or you know, because sex is a primal function, human function.
Yes.
It intersects economic, social issues. It intersects equality issues. It's a powerful crossroads in all of our lives in terms of relationships and everything else. So those two specific talks, one, what was the first one again?
Dana Fidel.
Yeah, and what was she talking about?
She's a sex educator. She works with high school students, and she talks very frankly. So when I say that sex is something we have trouble talking about, you think about all the debates we have about what kind of curriculum we should have. There's right. abstinence only. Do we just do the medical, like here's the urethra? She'll talk about porn. She'll talk about dildos, and that's what kids are talking about, right?
Right.
So
I don't know
why
if
not
it's
have
ever
the frank conversation about yeah. what kids are already talking about rather than keep it in the dark, which is what Alex will talk about, which is what happens when we're using human beings as objects within the sex trade.
How do those talks relate specifically to Maine, or those more general subjects that if you're a human, whether you live in Maine or somewhere else, they're relevant?
Yeah, I think that's a key factor. It's relevant because we're human beings. The main connection are these are people that are living and working in Maine, right. but there'll be more Maine focus talks. So, for example, Shay Stewart Booley, who writes and blogs as Black Girl in Maine, mm-hmm. will be a speaker. And part of her conversation is about what's it like to be a Black woman in Maine.
Yeah, she is an active writer, blogger. She is an African American. I believe she's from Chicago.
That's right.
She's also works for a nonprofit down in Boston, specifically working on issues in terms of race and race relations. Mm-hmm. That's a huge subject here in Maine, and I'm interested in attending. Just I think they're all going to be interesting talks, but I think her talk is both topical and timely, and it feels like Maine doesn't have a healthy mechanism or approach to discussing the issue of race.
Right.
It's either connected to immigration issues, which mm-hmm. we've seen in the last few years, particularly with different areas of the state where there's been pockets of immigrants from Somalia or Lewiston, Auburn or other areas. And yeah, I think it's a fascinating subject that Maine is one of the least diverse states in the country. So it'll be interesting to, you know what her subject is, or is she just talking about kind of race in Maine?
That's the central theme, is yeah. race in Maine and her experience, both as you said, she runs an anti-racism organization, as well as just a human being amongst us all, right?
Yeah. Again, we've got Adam Burke here. He is the producer of TEDx Dirigo, November 5th at the State Theater.
That's right.
And if you go to that website, which is, where would people go for the website?
TEDxDirigo.com.
And there's a promo code, Stevo, STEVOE, for 10%. Afterwards, in the TED format, are the talks available online, or are they digitized, and how do people access that, and are those for free, and how do you monetize the experience of seeing it live, whereas a person could, you know, a week later or 2 weeks later go online and see it in that format?
Yeah, all the talks are available for free at TEDxDiergo.com and on YouTube. And the experience itself is worthwhile because, one, you're in the room live while it's happening, and there's a different experience when you're with the person sharing their story on stage, as well as with 500 other people that are experiencing the same moment in time. And our audience is dynamic, and it's a fun place to be for the day to dive into these conversations. Some of them that you're going there because you definitely want to talk about that. Other things that arise during the day that you had no idea about previously, but are energizing to talk about.
And what's the criteria for selecting the speakers in terms of every year? You know, do you start with a theme that you try to fill in relative to insight? And is there a committee or a group that says, hey, that we need to have something in terms of whether it's race or energy or other kind of social or real issues? How does that get decided?
Yeah, no matter what, the TED format's designed to be multidisciplinary, so it's never about one topic. We do have a group. Ariel Hall's our curator. Mike Tutterico is our creative director. Rob Gould's our communications director. Tim Farrell's our content director, and Sally Newhall's our logistics director and co-host. And we meet to discuss some of these primary decisions, like what's the theme going to be? And this year we talked about what was happening in the world, and dissonance is just clearly what is happening. We are not in harmony locally, nationally, globally. And sometimes TED Talks tend to go towards the levity in terms of the framing, at least, and we just decided to be honest with what we're feeling and lean deeply into that with our program this year. And then from there, yeah, we think about who are people that are going to represent different perspectives, different sectors, different backgrounds in terms of business, personal background. We work from a list of 150 possibilities approximately down to this 15.
And you know, given that you'll be 72 hours before what is arguably one of the most significant elections in U.S. history, you know, I don't think that's too hyperbolic given what's at stake and where we are as a country and where we are in the world. How much of the discussion do you expect will either directly or indirectly touch upon the fact that during this next TEDx Diergo event, it's 72 hours from the most significant political event ever in the U.S.?
Well, we're talking about issues that are being raised during this election season. We're not talking about candidates. We're not endorsing candidates at the event. But we're talking about race. We're talking about equity. We're talking about sex. We're talking about women's rights and our perspectives on women. That's all there, and that plays right into it.
Yeah, absolutely. We have Adam Burke here, founder of the Treehouse Institute, also producer of TEDx Diergo. What's going on at the Treehouse Institute?
Yeah, Treehouse Institute is got some new things happening. One is the Portland Global Shapers, which is an initiative of the World Economic Forum. Last year, they reached out to me to ask if I would create a hub here. And that meant getting together a bunch of people under the age of 30 that were committed to creating positive impact here in Portland and in Maine while connecting with a network of 450 cities and 5,000 other shapers around the world. So we have been working on a couple projects. One's Portland Participates, where we're looking at improving the public participation process in city decision-making. The other one I mentioned is this Maine Girls Innovate that we're getting ready to roll out. And lastly, another project was Resilient Portland, which is a knowledge map of efforts in sustainability.
Interesting. From your background, both with the Treehouse Institute and producer TEDx, and played a role in the launch of the Baxter Academy for Science and Technology, one of the handful of charter schools here in Maine, it feels like you're very involved with community-type programs and both in education and kind of academic overlay and environment. What's your general view? And now here we are in October 2016. in terms of the state of the state relative to people being active and involved, because there are so many issues and so many problems, challenges, and also opportunities, but it feels like none of these things really get to where they need to go until people get out of their own individual space and commit to helping in some way, being part of a group. But do you see from your experience more people here in Maine, specifically Southern Maine, where you're based and I'm based, getting more involved? Is it about the same, or do you think that it's pulling back some?
Well, I have a filter bubble on that issue. Like you said, I'm very, very involved, but it does seem to be a rising tide. I see more and more people, and there's more and more efforts that are involving more and more people to get involved.
Is it the millennials? Do you think it's an age group thing? You know, Maine is famously almost going into negative numbers in terms of population growth. Do you see a shift in terms of age group involvement that, you know, in the different areas you're involved with?
No, I see it as a multi-generational effort. I see high school students, I see college students, recent college grads, people my age, young families, people in their 50s, people that are in encore careers, retired, all the way through.
Yeah. You mentioned one of your favorite accomplishments to date is becoming a dad.
Yeah.
Is that a recent event?
3 years ago.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes.
Isn't that something?
It is magical every day.
Yeah. So I've often thought whether it's political or racial or economic problems we face around the world, if everyone could look at the future through the lens of the feeling that we all have when we have kids, or you have a little brother, a little sister, in that type of empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could take that empathy and say, yeah, this is how I feel, why don't I just apply some of that thinking to this issue or this war, or this military conflict, or this social conflict, I think we'd be in a lot better place.
I agree with you on that.
Well, geez, we've run out of time. And we've had Adam Burke here. He's one of Maine Magazine's 50 people in 2000. 50 most beautiful people, or just 50 best people, or 50 tallest people? What is it? It just says 50
visionaries
people.
It just said, shaping the state of Maine.
My production note says he was one of Maine Magazine's 50 people. But you're one of the visionaries. You were on Maine 40 under 40 list. Mm-hmm. As soon as they do the 70 under 70 list, I think that's the sweet spot for me, because it's a big enough number that I may qualify. And then, of course, the age qualification. It's really great having you here, and I wish you a lot of luck with TEDx. Adam is one of the people in the state that I think is really doing good things in many, many areas. You can follow him on Twitter. He's very both active and insightful, at Adam Burke. Also Twitter for at Treehouse Institute, INST. And then also TEDx Dirigo has a Twitter feed, as well as Facebook. But look into TEDxDirigo.com. If you're not doing anything or you're able to make the time, a lot of interesting people attend these events. There's a lot of subjects, and it's kind of a cool vibe. So November 5th, doors open at 12, program starts at 1, and if you go on the website and type in Steve-O, you could get half off, or at the very least, Adam said 10%, but there may be like a mystery discount that pops up.
I like it. Well, you never know when that will pop in.
Yeah. Adam Burke, thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Steve.
You've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve on News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM and 100.5 FM. We'll be back next week.